Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 27th of January, 2021. And well, you can't take a lot away from the headlines when you look at the broader averages here. If we look at the U.S. Equity Index, for example, broadly flat, the S&P 500, not a spectacular session, but there is an awful lot going on behind the scenes here in these small names, these most shorted names, especially the craziness in GameStop, where you might have thought we'd seen the sort of the peak, at least in that specific stock, the peak and reversal in that situation. But Peter, take us through what's going on there. We're seeing another attack on the shorts there, and it was even up to a crazy level on top of yesterday's close after hours.
Yeah, so the whole short squeeze just continues, John, and GameStop is definitely the poster child of what's really going on. We ended yesterday just below $150, a spectacular run up from the close the day before below 80, and in the aftermarket trading, it continued all the way to $209. You can see on a five-year chart, which I've put in on slide four, you can see the spectacular move in GameStop. So we're talking about a company that is essentially dying because we've moved away from physical stores where you can buy games to basically just online video game streaming, but also and also delivery of games online, and you purchase your PlayStation and games online more and more. So it makes sense from a fundamentals perspective why a lot of hedge funds are shorting GameStop. But this Wall Street Bets stock forum on Reddit, which it has around 2 million followers, it's basically driving the show here. And there's a lot of things going on. It's a lot of market structure as well. It's free options trading, free trading in the physical stocks. You have market makers, hedging their hedging the flows that are coming in with these weekly call options, probably helping pushing up the underlying stocks as well. There's a lot of things going on. I don't know what to say about it, John, other than, as you said yesterday, it's not really a healthy sign. And go ahead.
A couple of comments. I mean, you had that great list on Bloomberg yesterday of all these most shorted names. And I saw in Barron's, they pulled out the 10 most, or I guess 11 most shorted names there. And I put those in a chart on slide four as well. And you can see the 1 week in blue and then the bars, 1 week bar of performance, and then the 1 month in the reddish color there. And you see how most of this has been a case, has been a situation over the last week. The GameStop, by the way, is just completely off the chart. It was so I could get the other ones. Otherwise, you couldn't see what's going on. GameStop up 600%. And that was before yesterday's close, which probably adds like another couple hundred percent from the basing of where we started. Relative to the NASDAQ on the far right, it's clear there's a pattern. I mean, every single one of these names, even the worst performing of those, the Academy Sports and Outdoors, ASO, is up more than twice the NASDAQ 100. It's, and then there's a perspective around this. So we tweeted out a great Tracy Alloway commentary yesterday on this, saying this is in a way sort of a populist backlash from the smaller trader out there, sort of like, we can have our fun too in this market. It's not just the sharp operators that can make money. Almost like there's the crowd is out with the pitchforks is one way you can put it. But let's not be naive. Who's making a lot of money out of this besides the ones that are lucky enough to be playing this game while it's fun? It's the market makers. There are some sharp operators out there that know how this works, that are front running a lot of this order flow, and they're making the money, and they will still have that money when all of this ends in a steaming pile of wreckage at some point. That would be my only perspective to add on top of this. I don't know what you say to that, that you're largely in agreement. And it's impossible to know the time scale here if we're talking about parallels to year 2000, which is always difficult. This could run for, let's say, that beginning of the year sprint in 2000 into the early March timeframe. So another month or so, who knows where this could peak out.
We'll see, John. The only thing we as we talked about yesterday, the runway will get shorter and shorter from now on because the implied volatility and the realized volatility is exploding. So the premiums you have to pay to play this game is just awfully expensive. I think it's interesting that this is only a US phenomenon. So that points to that there are some structural things going on here. But we'll see what happens. It's for time being, it's just a sideshow. It's you can call it entertainment. But if we move to slide five and also get you, Altair, into the conversation, we We're flat in the broader market, as you mentioned, John, in the beginning, but the NASDAQ 100 is posting a new all-time high on the close yesterday, and we're pushing high, as you can see on slide five again this morning in the futures. And a lot of it is driven by, I think, the combination of a strong Microsoft earnings, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, but then also that the yields are not climbing back from that drop they had on Friday. And that's back to sort of yields, what's going on with the reflation trade. And I think this is where you come in, Althea, because something is not right if we are right about our reflation theme. It looks a little bit in trouble right now.
Yeah, it seems that since the TIPS auction from last Thursday, there has been a little bit of steam off the reflation trade. However, Peter, I just want to flag the fact, and it's clear in slide number six, that 10-year treasury yields have been trading in an uptrend since August until today. So 1% level still remains a very important support line, but as soon as we have the reflation team picking up again, we might see the 10-year treasury yields going up towards 1.2% and trying that resistance line. And one of the catalysts I had might be the Fed today, just because I don't expect the Fed to take any hawkish stand, but it might comment or answer any question regarding tapering. And whenever the Fed talks about tapering, then the bond market sell off.
Yeah, and to add to that, on the FOMC tonight, my main point of curiosity, of course, as well as tapering, we may have somewhat settled that issue because there was a whole lot of fuss and talk about it by a lot of Fed members recently. It kind of sounded like the most influential members are, it's too early to send any signal on that. I wonder if they're looking at some pockets of the speculative market and wanting to roll it out anyway. But anyway, the key question to me, and the question I hope certainly comes up in the Q&A, and I hope gets a proper answer from Fed Chair Powell, is what does the Fed think about the fact that it is only buying half as much as it needs to buy to cover the net issuance load that is coming in this year? This $80 billion a month is, does it go anywhere near covering, current net issuance needs over the year? In other words, somebody else has to buy those bonds, whether it's savers, and if they're saving, then they're not, consuming. And that's not even including the Biden stimulus on top of that. So endless questions. And I really would suggest that, and I mentioned it yesterday, if we're going back below 1% in the 10-year, then something is desperately wrong with this reflationary narrative. I'm not saying we're going to go back below it. I'm just saying if it does, we need to second guess what's going on here. And I'll get back to you, I'll say in a moment. I just want to run through a couple of things I had here. I think you had a really good point on investment grade bonds. We're talking about an internal meeting, but and regarding investment grade bonds and junk and risk appetite generally, you can see how we are doing on slide seven. This is a sort of a proprietary indicator I came up with some time ago. Looks at a number of risk indicators just to give you a sense of how things are doing relative to a moving average. And we've seen just an incredibly strong period here, almost unprecedented besides parts of 2019, which saw, of course, explosive advance in equities. And a few episodes back in 2017. So there's absolutely no fear on the risk appetite front, still looking at broad indicators like this. And we can see on the inset or the other chart below right that in FX, we're getting down to new lows post pandemic blow up in implied volatility. So the anticipation that the market volatility is gonna pick up is also trending lower. So it means two things. It means risk is very, very much on, but it also means it's been very on for a very long time. I'm getting uncomfortable with the levels of risk willingness in this market. And for the long-term, hedging trader, it's getting a little bit cheaper to hedge exposures when you see the volatility is dropping. Of course, we saw the record low volatility in FX back in early 2020, and we're nowhere near those levels. And then other signs, I mentioned recently that some of the background conditions were very supportive of dollar weakness. And we have seen a bit of dollar weakness, but it hasn't been particularly impressive. So, contrarian plays against that in the short term, something like dollar Canada, you can see on slide eight, how the momentum has really kind of come out of that downside. The last three new lows have all been gathered up very quickly. So I'm curious to see if we post a new high above some of these local pivots here 127.50 plus on the close, even 128. We could see a squeeze back towards 130. But I'll tell you, on these investment grade bonds, you had an interesting, you have an interesting specific issue coming out. I guess it was yesterday, and the demand for that was pretty remarkable.
Oh, yes, absolutely, John. So the topic here is that the average yield that investment grade that bonds are offering right now is below the 10 years break-even rate. So basically, what it means that on average, if you buy an investment grade bond, you will lose value against inflation because it's eroding basically your yield. But this is true for the average investment grade issue, but yesterday was issued United Airlines, $600 million worth of bonds with maturity. And even though this is an investment grade, the yield that was able to provide that was it was close to 5%. But something that we need to highlight is that United Airlines is obviously trading in distressed territory. We know that the airline industry has been one of the most harshly hit during the pandemic. So what we see is basically junk levels being paid in investment grade ratings. And as you can see, the bond is rated at the lowest level of investment grade. So it's very much at risk for a rating downgrade.
All right. And then we have still, if you're a resident Italian, we have the goings on in the at the top of the Italian government with Conte resigning. But I looked at BTPs the other day, and they seem quite complacent. Not any real fear that there's new elections or any instability on the way there. What's your take?
Well, John, I think that at this moment of time, the market is a little bit too confident that a new government will be formed. Yesterday, Prime Minister Conte resigned, and today is going to look to form a new majority for a new government headed by it. The market has been rallying massively since the beginning of the week. In only 2 days, we have seen 10 years BTP yields falling by 10 basis points. And now they are trading at 0.64%. So a movement of 10 basis points is quite considerable. I think that this overconfidence is going to play against the market because Italian politics are not linear. From the news coming out from Italy, it doesn't seem that there is a solid majority yet. So before a new government might be formed, there might be more volatility in this space.
All right. And just briefly, if there were to be elections, what's your take on what those result would be? Is the populist side on the right, is it sufficiently large to get would it be sufficiently large to win that election?
Yeah, the polls gives a favor to the Northern League. So, you know, a right party, which is a populist and eurosceptic. So that would be very negative. But the biggest point here is that if we have new elections, then the recovery fund package might be delayed. And that's like the biggest issue that we would see playing out in case new elections are called.
Yeah, I definitely have my long-term concerns about Europe, but it looks like they may not play into the situation there, at least in the near term, but there is certainly room for risk there. Now, Peter, let's get back to earnings. You got some of the biggest mega caps reporting, and Microsoft was up yesterday. Take us through that and what you're looking for the rest of this week. And today really is the big haul of the week, isn't it?
It certainly is. And if we start with what happened yesterday, we flagged three earnings to watch. And the first one was Microsoft. The second one was LVMH, the big luxury group in Europe. And then next era. If we start with Microsoft, slide 11, phenomenal run up in the stock price over the over a 5-year period. It rose 4% in the aftermarket in aftermarket trading on the result, and trading around $240 per share. At Microsoft doesn't follow the normal calendar year, so it's it was their Q2 result with the quarter ending in December. And as you can see on the small insert, the results were quite strong. I mean, the earnings per share were $2 versus 164 expected. Revenue was 43 billion versus 40 expected. It was very much driven by, you know, strong results across the board, but specifically, I think, in personal computing, and obviously driven by the continued mobility restrictions we see around the world, which is driving demand for that. The cloud was doing very well as well. We all sort of knew that with the results we got from Intel, and I think the guidance is quite strong from Microsoft. So I mean, here we are. We have a behemoth in the world driving revenue growth of 17% compared to a year ago in a global pandemic. There's not much to say. It was pretty much flawless from Microsoft. LVMH is up around 2-3% in European trading. They reported after the European close yesterday, very very strong results, and I think the guidance is particularly strong. They are raising the dividend per share to 6 euros versus 4.5 expected by the market, and the dividends is typically an indirect guidance because you don't raise the dividends unless you have a unless you have a strong outlook, simply because it's cash out of the door from the balance sheet to the shareholders, and so, you know, Louis Vuitton is benefiting a lot from you know, that the 1% of the world is seems for now at least quite insulated to what's happening in the pandemic. And then we have Next Era that reported yesterday. I would call it a slight disappointment. You can see that from the share price reaction. This is really something to watch, because if Next Era is any guidance on the rest of the green stocks in Europe and the US, then we have to watch this green transformation theme, because as I said in our Q1 outlook, which was published yesterday, I think this year we will split from being all in on green stocks to that of green quality versus green speculative junk. This is definitely something to watch. In terms of the calendar today, Apple, Tesla, Facebook, and Boeing are the four stocks we have on our watch list today. I think Tesla will be the the show. It will be the star on the scene, so to speak. I think the expectations are incredibly high. I doubt whether Tesla can actually live up to the expectations. But as I wrote in the Monday's preview for this week's earnings releases, it's quite fortunate for Tesla that there is only two pure EV bets you can make in this world, and it's Tesla and it's NIO. The rest is just noise. Even Renault, which is best-selling European pure EV car, the Renault Zoe, is only 3% of their revenue, and the company is a mess. So I think the fact that there is scarcity of pure electrical vehicle plays in the market will insulate Tesla for now against potential disappointments. And then it will be interesting to see with Tesla as well, that we wrote about this yesterday on analysis.saxo, that there's a lot of constraints coming out of the Taiwanese semiconductor industry, and that's hitting the car makers, with some car makers in Europe having idling factories because of missing components. A typical car today uses around 100 microprocessors. So it'll be interesting to see whether Tesla is hit by this, and particularly with Apple. And then I will end my spiel on earnings. So Apple, being the biggest company in the S&P 500, is definitely something to watch here. And they will post a phenomenal quarter from the holiday season, probably the most profitable quarter ever for a company, beating the previous record from ExxonMobil during the strong days of oil prices back in 2008. But I think going forward, there are some rumors that Apple are also seeing bottlenecks on supplies of computer chips and memory chips. So we'll watch that and see whether that has any impact on their outlook.
All right, and then something that can always impact the outlook or the day-to-day action markets, of course, is an FOMC meeting. There is just so little to anticipation around this evening's meeting, which would mean that it'd be very easy to surprise. It just, the Fed is in a spot where they need to see what shapes up in terms of stimulus. They need to see how the economy shapes up in terms of the vaccine rollout and how firm activity proves after that. I think they've been relatively impressed with how the economy has done, given given the COVID situation, et cetera. So of course, we'll be looking for signals on tapering. I'm not sure we're going to get a lot on that front. And then, like I said, I think the most interesting one would be the Fed's comments, if any, and if the question is asked, I hope reporters are on the case about what they plan to do if yields go above X, or the fact that their purchases simply don't cover anything near the net issuance needs, and therefore that could provide some upside pressure on yield. So yield curve control, in other words, that is more interesting to me than any, or more likely to me to be interesting than taper talk. But let's see. We'll always be open to what they say, and follow us on Twitter, etc., for any comments that come up during the presser 30 minutes after the FOMC meeting this evening. For now, we're going to call it a day, and we will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. For today, thanks for joining.